Live from the podcast studio, this is From Long Distance to Marriage with Rich and Andrea. We're a once long distance couple who closed 5,000 miles of distance and are now happily married.
We talk long distance, marriage and relationships.
Hi everyone and welcome to episode 32 of From Long Distance to Marriage. This week we're doing another kind of requested episode. Someone contacted us with a question, which we'll get to in a couple minutes, but I guess we just want to talk a little bit about the awesome week we had in America. Or not.
Was that my cue?
I thought so.
Yeah, it was a good week.
I thought that was clear. Yeah, we got back yesterday. I'm severely jet lagged. Rich is doing okay.
I slept better than you.
You slept for 11 hours. I've got like maybe 6 broken hours with 4 hours awake in the middle, which was super fun, but it was great. We were out there for a little over a week for my brother's wedding. I gave a cracking speech, got to see friends, got to see family. The weather wasn't quite what we hoped it would be. Pretty gray, fairly rainy for California, but it was good.
It was a busy trip.
It was very busy.
It was tiring.
It was very tiring. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah.
You liked the wedding, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a nice wedding.
Yeah. And it was good to see my niece and nephew. They were at a really fun age. They're like 11 and 6, and they're just hilarious little people. And my nephew was a ring bearer, and he was just redonkulously cute. And his little wedding suit pretending to be James Bond. My niece wore makeup and looked like she was about 16.
Well, she was, what, 3 at his last wedding?
Yeah. Apparently, I don't know if you heard about this or if you saw it, but apparently she did the worm out on the dance floor.
I heard about it, I didn't see it.
I didn't either. I didn't know she could do this, but we had a great time. The one time that my sister and her family came to visit here, because there were 6 of us and our cars only seat 5 people, and my nephew has a booster seat and stuff, we had to like split up for everywhere we went and take 2 cars, so the boys would go with Rich in his car, and the girls would come with me in my car, and we'd have to, like, follow each other everywhere. And one of the nights we were driving back from somewhere, Journey's song, Don't Stop Believing, came on. And so my sister and Elle and I all burst out in song, and it came on at the wedding, and they drug me out on the dance floor, and we had a great little memory session there dancing to that. And then straight after that, Bohemian Rhapsody came on. My sister went off to do something else, and my niece and I sit on the dance floor. She surprisingly knows, like, pretty much every, as many words as you can know to that song, because there are some weird words in that. But it was really fun. It was a great day.
And that's why we've been quiet on Instagram.
Yeah, I tried to post a few things, but it's just been such a busy trip. Like, at my brother's wedding, I didn't take a single picture other than, like, right after my hair was, like, got done, I took a picture of it, but I didn't take a single picture. We're just really enjoying the day, talking to people we don't get to see very much.
Yeah.
It's the first time I've gone back for a specific event like that, and it was really cool because I got to see a lot of people that I wouldn't normally, you know, a family that lives in other parts of the country that aren't normally there just for Christmas or whatever, so that was special. And I was also there for Mother's Day because that was the day after my brother's wedding, so that was really cool. I think I haven't seen my mom on Mother's Day in like 8 or 9 years.
Well, yeah, it would have been 2011.
Yeah, so 8 years.
Yeah.
Long time. But yeah, it was awesome. Need to adjust. We're back at work Monday.
Yay.
Yeah.
Neither of us can wait.
Neither of us can wait. I just want to sleep. Because I was just saying to Rich on the way back from a movie, which we'll talk about in a second, that I didn't sleep well at all on this trip. There was like maybe 2 nights while we were away that I slept decent. So I'm like running on an average about 4-5 hours of sleep for the past week each night. So anyways, enough complaining. We just saw a movie and it was pretty fun, and it was called
what?
I tapped you. That means you need to say
you didn't remember the name.
Yeah, I just wanted you to join.
Oh,
in.
We're just doing a double team.
Yeah, because I was talking a lot and you didn't say
okay.
much.
Okay, yeah,
okay, so hold on. Rewind.
Why?
Rewind, because we gotta do it again.
Okay,
we just got back from a movie and it was called
John Wick 3
Parabellum.
Right,
we could do like movie adverts.
Not based on this audition.
Well, we didn't prepare that much, to be fair.
We didn't prepare at all.
There's another podcast I like. It's a new one. It's hosted by Topher Grace. He was the guy in That 70s Show.
And I didn't watch it.
Oh, well, he's the main actor in that. Most people probably know who he is. But he has one, and it's called Minor Adventures with Topher Grace, and he gets, like, his celebrity friends on, and they have, like, a surprise task they have to do. And one of the guys, I think it was Zachary Levi from that Shazam movie, he came on, and there was, like, this guy that was there, and they had to, like, learn how to do... Oh, no! It was another guy from that 70s show, Wilmer Valderrama. They had to do... like, movie, like, the guy that does the movie voiceover advert things was there, and they had to do it. It was really fun. Maybe we could get him on our podcast, and he could teach us.
Maybe.
Not sure how that ties into relationships in any way.
Maybe he could do the intro to our show.
They did. They used it for their intro. It was pretty funny. Yeah, we could see. We could do, like, a rom-com theme. Anyways, John Wick 3, Parabellum. Action-packed fun ride from literally the very beginning.
That first fight scene
is... Oh, my gosh. Really... We were saying, like, action movies can be really hit or miss with, like, fight scenes because sometimes they're too up close and you can't really tell what's going on or who's who, but these are choreographed so well and there's so much humor in them. It was just really funny. And, like, I was exhausted after the first one. We're just laughing.
I mean, don't watch it if you didn't like the first two.
Yeah.
If you did like the first two, you'll probably like this one.
If you haven't seen any, watch the first one to see if you like it.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I stayed awake during it, so that's saying a lot.
Yeah, I don't know how you can fall asleep during John Wick.
Well, no, I got really tired at one point, and, like, I was slumped in my seat, and I had to sit up. So, yeah, that's kind of what we've been up to. Sorry for the delay, and kind of, well, not the delay, lack of photos and updates lately, but...
But the episodes have been out on time. Yes. Scheduled, so no complaints.
No complaints, people.
We scheduled that last one.
We did. We did it, like, a couple days before we went away and scheduled it.
Yep. And then while we were away, we were on the laptop updating the website. Yeah,
maybe a couple days late, but we did.
So, you haven't got to mention that bit.
Well, we were at a wedding.
The audio was out on time.
Yes, it was. With a really funny picture. The funny thing...
Oh, it was the wanking episode.
It was the cactus.
Yeah.
So, funny story.
What's this?
I'm going to tell.
I suppose I'm about to hear it.
Yeah. Sit tight, partner. When we do our episodes, you know, record them, Rich edits them, usually get some uploaded. I find a, you know, good cover image. I do, like, the SEO stuff because I do a lot of that at work. So last week we were in such a hurry to get it uploaded and scheduled, as Rich said, that he just kind of went to go pack, I think, or something. And he didn't see the photo that I'd picked. And, like, using free stock imagery, it's kind of hard to find, well, suggestive photos that aren't too suggestive, I guess, if that makes sense. So I found that, like, cactus one. If you haven't seen it, go back and look at our feed and find the last episode 31, Friend or Foe, Masturbation and Relationships. And you'll see that it's, like, yeah, like one of those mannequin wooden hands, like, kind of stroking a phallic-shaped cactus. And so anyways, I didn't tell Rich about it. I forgot about it, just, like, scheduled it. I didn't tell him to be funny. I just didn't. And then we were at my brother's, and the morning after the wedding, we got up, because that's a Sunday, and he just looks at his phone and starts cracking up. He's like, I didn't know you picked this photo, and I'd forgotten. But it was pretty funny. We laughed.
It was a good
photo. Laughed, we cried. No.
Should we get on to this episode then?
Yes. So, episode 32. As I mentioned, it's a request episode.
Well, it's not so much a request episode. We happened to have Wi-Fi on the plane on the way back, which was nice. And we put up a story that said, do you have any questions for us to answer on the plane? This is one of the questions.
And we thought it'd be a good episode.
Yeah. They didn't specifically ask it to be an episode, but you're welcome.
When I say requests, I just mean that someone's asked us for some information.
Well, the previous ones that we've called requests have actually been people saying we'd like you to talk about this.
I'm so sorry. People would be so mad if they knew that I said that
it's
wrong.
It's important to be honest.
Well, I was honest.
Anyway, so this is a bonus request, if you like.
No, don't say request. You're going to give people the wrong idea.
I said bonus request because it was a question that we've turned into a full episode.
No.
Which is going above and beyond.
Anyways, this person asked about tips or advice.
Well, they asked how quick, how easy it was for you to find a job after you'd moved over here.
Yeah. Me specifically or just people in general?
Well, I already was here.
Huh?
I was already here.
No, but like... people who moved to another country.
We'll elaborate into what other people can do. So, I mean, so I said in answering it, it was easier for you than it perhaps could have been because you natively speak the language. So you've already got a
bit... You say that, but American...
There are slight differences, but it's not like you spoke a completely different language. There's an advantage. You know, we are followed by people who don't have that advantage. Maybe they're moving somewhere like Mexico, or they're going from a country and they're going from their country to a country that speaks English natively. Yeah. And so it's not necessarily that you're not going to find a job. You will, but you have the disadvantage that it's not your native language.
Yeah, there's different things you'll have to consider.
So for you, that wasn't so much an issue.
Yeah, so for me, I was teaching in America. And then when we came out here, obviously I couldn't work for a few months because of visa stuff. But when I was able to get a job, I was pretty set on not going straight into teaching again or any kind of specific career. I just wanted to kind of settle in a bit and get used to working in the country, meet people. So my first job was working in a pub. I think depending on where you are in your career or what you do, or what your financial situation might be, it can be a really good idea to get kind of a lower responsibility job while you're settling in. Because I know I struggled a little bit adjusting. We were living with Rich's family, so there was, kind of just a lot of settling in. And I think that going straight into a career-focused or kind of stressful job would have been a little bit, would have made things a lot harder for me. So for me, it was, I think, wise to go into that service industry where I could go in, clock in, do my work, clock out, come home, and didn't have to think about it. That was pretty easy to do. I mean, I had worked in restaurants and stuff in college in America, so I had relevant experience, and that wasn't too difficult for me to do. But I think it really depends on what you're doing. And I would just say, firstly, you need to research and make sure that you can work in that country. Like, if you've had to move to a different country and, you know, depending on your visa situation, you may not be able to work straight away.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't work on that first visa.
Yeah, I had 6 months to where we could arrange our wedding and get married. And then once we got married, we had to send all that paperwork off and apply for the next visa until I was granted that. And then got a national insurance number, which is, like, in America, similar to kind of a social security number. And then I could start applying for jobs. So first things first, make sure you know what's what when it comes to your eligibility for working in the country. That's kind of the main thing. And then after that, if you are in a job that requires qualifications, research what needs to be done with that. So for instance, when I finally did think, okay, you know, I'm ready to look at more of a serious job, and I looked into teaching, I found, for example, that in England, if you had qualified as a teacher and had a teaching license in any English-speaking country, so Canada, America, New Zealand, Australia, places like that, you could just exchange your qualification for the British equivalent and just start applying for jobs. Didn't work out. I didn't end up staying in teaching, but those would kind of be my first two top tips, really.
Yeah, I think for anyone moving, because it depends on your age and your career experience so far, doesn't it? But I think don't be afraid. Just do what you need to do to get earning some money. Yeah. I think for you, it also helped because it was a local job. Like, you were able to walk there. Yeah. So
I couldn't drive first when I moved here.
Yeah, so you were able to meet people, you know, get you into the community a bit more. It helps you get into the country a bit more. So, I mean, and because that was a public-facing job, that's quite helpful for you to sort of understand British culture a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because you're dealing with all sorts of different people. And so, you know, there's a, I think it's one of those things, you don't really expect a big cultural shift between, well, I suppose any English-speaking country, you don't expect a big cultural difference. But there are surprising ones. And obviously the way we talk to each other and our humour is very different.
Yeah, and I mean, that's taken me years to get used to, like the way British people treat each other.
Whereas if you'd moved here and just worked at home, you know, it would have taken a lot longer to sort of ingratiate yourself with how we do things. So I think if you're able, unless you need a certain amount of money, just consider doing something just to get your foot in the door. I think if you're a little bit older though, and you're on a career path and you're in a certain industry, it may be worth trying to apply from where you are now. So, you know, you've got that job lined up to move, if that's an option of people. Obviously, you're still going to have the visa requirements. So a lot of companies will. Well, so a friend of mine moved to Australia, and he went over on a work visa from here.
It was a working holiday visa.
Yeah, so he went over originally on the working holiday visa, because Australia's got that funny thing where you have to like work on a farm or something for a little while.
I don't think you have to.
But then the company that eventually hired him, when he'd finished that commitment, he got, because he's from IT here, he got into the same industry over there and they sponsored him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, companies will do that. I think requirements can differ from one country to another with regards to, I've heard that they have to prove that they can't employ a national over you or whatever, but
that was specifically Canada. It may or may not apply.
Yeah, so looking into what it's like in your country. But if it's something, you know, if you're thinking, oh, I can't just go there without a job lined up, then try and get one lined up in advance. And you're going to know certain industries in certain countries are easier to get into, like, you know, if there's a shortage of whatever you do, you know, in the country you're going to, then you probably haven't got too much to worry about. If you're trying to get into a really saturated market in a country that doesn't need you, it's going to be harder, and it may be a good time to consider a career change if you want one, or it's going to be easier to get into the country. So yeah, I think for you, if you'd said, right, I'm coming over, I'm definitely going to be a teacher and I'm not doing anything else, that would have been much harder.
Yeah.
You would certainly would have needed money in the bank to support yourself while that was going through, because there had to be something for you for, like, do you need certification or something?
Yeah, as I was mentioning earlier, I had to, like, transfer.
But that took, like, you didn't come over here with that. You had to apply for something.
No, I just had to send in my certification and wait for them to send.
But it took a little while, right?
Yeah, it took, a little while, basically.
I feel like you had to wait for interviews before,
No, I was waiting for it, and, like, I spoke to whoever was the governing body that was issuing this, basically straight qualification change. And I said, well, can I, like, apply? And they're like, yeah, like, it's not a matter of if you'll get it. It's just a matter of when. And it was brand new,
The
whole program. So there was a lot of questions around it. So I started interviewing, saying, like, it will be coming. And I think a lot of schools, it was new. I didn't have it yet. So I didn't really get anywhere with those interviews. And, you know, that led me to think, okay, do I keep trying to do this? Like, I was already working at the pub. I had a little bit of income. You know, we had very few outgoings. So we were fine. We were okay. We weren't going to grow anywhere, but we could make ends meet.
Yeah.
So then I started looking at other careers.
And because that won't always be the case. I mean, the qualifications I've got in marketing probably wouldn't work in another country. It doesn't mean you have to start at the very bottom of the ladder, but maybe you have to work out, is there an equivalent that it can just be converted to? Or if, you know, you maybe just have to do their equivalent of the same qualification, because at least you've got the knowledge of it, and it's just about getting it accredited in the body they recognise.
Yeah,
certainly I think if money's going to be an issue without a job, or you think, I am absolutely wedded to this industry, I'm not going to consider anything else, I think my suggestion would be look into it before you go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rather than jumping in blind. And if you're able to land interviews or get on an agency's books or even get a job offer before you move, then that's absolutely ideal. Because it can be a huge, if you're moving to be with someone, it can be a huge black cloud, and it's stressful enough, isn't it, moving? You don't want that on top of it and potentially causing arguments between the two of you because you're worried about it, and then them accusing you of being rigid in what you want to do as a career. You know, there's any number of ways that could cause you problems.
Yeah, and I just want to back up, you were talking about, like, the qualifications and whether or not they match up in the country you're moving to. I worked in recruitment after the pub, for an accountancy and finance recruitment company. And we did have people who were qualified in another country, and were coming to England or had moved to England. And yeah, it was a matter of, I mean, obviously not everything's going to be exactly like this, but it might be, there's a few modules you have to do. So, like, obviously in accounting, say you're a qualified CPA in the United States, I think the closest thing in England would be an ACA, qualified accountant. And, like, for instance, all your tax modules would be on U.S. tax, so you'd have to make up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there might be just some modules that you need to make up. You would, like Rich said, you wouldn't have to do the whole thing over. It depends on the industry. But I think what can be, like, even if you're not moving to a country, looking for a job logistically can feel, like, a bit overwhelming and confusing. Like, okay, do I apply before, you know, I quit my job? How do I handle interviews when I'm, you know, at my job? It can feel like you're doing a lot. So adding an international move can be confusing. So some of the things that I'm not so sure on advising that people might have questions about is, like, you know, like you said, it might be good to start applying before you move. I think that's totally true. But then I don't know if some companies might be like, okay, well, you're moving, but you don't have right to work. Like, are they going to be willing to sponsor people? Is that something they do? Is it, are you going to be less attractive if you don't already have your working visa?
Yeah, and I think that there's, I think there's also psychology at play of, you're likely going to have in your head, like, oh, you know, am I as good as these people? Why am I? You're like, sort of imposter syndrome.
Which you have anyway, applying for jobs.
You do have it, but then you're going to say, you know, I'm not from here. I don't know the area. I don't know what the people are like out here. You're going to have all that probably in mind. It might be good to sort of try and, you know, acknowledge that you're going to have that in advance and work on it. And then, yeah, so I think if you're able to get the job and everything lined up beforehand, that could be a way of bypassing that. You're not dealing in with the interview stage where you've got that going on.
Yeah.
You just have regular first day nerves.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I think everyone's situation's going to be unique and you have to work around that. But
and if it's possible, like, there are countries that are going to look more favourably on certain countries. You know, I don't know, maybe not everyone's happy to acknowledge it, but I know that, you know, as a Brit going to America and Canada, we're normally quite well received. We're a bit of a novelty. I mentioned in the answer to the question on Instagram about you that you were seen as a bit exotic as well. You know, the recruitment company you ended up working for liked you answering the phones because it made them seem international.
Yeah.
You know, so there can be some real benefits to you being foreign, but I think that there are some countries where your nationality can be more or less desirable. I don't think me being English is going to do me any favours somewhere like France, maybe.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't be very good in Mexico because I don't speak any of that language.
Yeah.
It's a completely different culture, but I feel I've got a degree of confidence if I went to somewhere like America or Canada and applied for the right jobs, I could be seen in a more positive light.
Yeah, yeah, and that's true, depending where you go.
Now, of course, if you're moving like you moved to be with me, you don't have a choice in where I live. But if you knew, actually, I'm American, I'm not going to get a job there. Maybe that's a conversation that you have. Do both of you move to...
A more neutral country. Yeah. Or should the other person move to you? Would it be easier for them?
Yeah, or do you try and figure it all out in advance? So there are some sort of considerations that maybe aren't immediately obvious. I think that can be one of them.
Yeah, and I think you should also, you know, Richard said, you know, if you're earlier on in your career or if you're further along and you're established in what you do, definitely if it's the latter, you should probably... That should be a big part of the conversation when you decide who's going to move. So if one of you works in an industry where they can get a job anywhere or they're highly sought after in the country you're planning, you know, one of you's from, you know, that should play a factor in deciding, in making that decision. Like,
yeah, totally.
If, like, so for instance, say whatever you did was really hard to find in America, or you were going to really struggle and maybe it would have been a bit easier for me coming here. Like, you know, you need to take that into consideration because it can make the whole process, easier and a bit more straightforward. And just a few other kind of tips that I picked up along the way. It wasn't really too difficult when I was applying for the pub job. People don't really care if, like, you're gonna, like, in the service industry, people care that you've got experience. But, like, the turnover is quite high, so people don't stay in those jobs very long. But I know that, like, when I went to my recruitment job, which was a more, you know, I think they want people to stay around in an office setting, you know, longer than maybe a restaurant or bar. And, you know, they asked the questions that made me feel like, okay, they're trying to see if I'm planning to stay here long term. You know, are they going to have to be recruiting my position again in a few years or a couple months, whatever. So I think, excuse me, we need to be prepared to kind of not defend your situation, but just be open about it and explain. So I made sure that, like, on my CV or resume, in the introduction paragraph, I kind of explained just very briefly my situation before I went into talking about, you know, my skills and my experience, just to say, like, I'm here on a settlement, indefinite leave to remain visa or whatever, just to kind of make sure that people didn't have so many questions. Because my concern, and I'm sure other people's concern, is if you just straight up send your CV or resume or application, whatever, and it's got your current address, which is in a different country, your education's all from a different country, they're going to think, why would I look at this person? But if you can explain, like, I've been in the country for this much time, you know, while getting used to the country.
And I'm living here full time.
With no intentions of, you know, you don't have to go into too much detail, but just a little bit of a background, I think, puts recruiters' minds at ease, or employers, because they have so many applications to go through. you don't want, you know, logistics and location to be something they just look at and dismiss. So be prepared to talk about that and be open about it and, yeah, explain a little bit, you know, why you've chosen to move here. I think you might feel some not uncomfortable questions in an interview, or like if they do an initial phone interview, that maybe they wouldn't ask otherwise if you weren't moving to a different country. So just don't feel like you're being interrogated, I guess, and just look at it from their perspective.
On that, you need to, in advance of anything you do, you need to have it in your mind that you need to make yourself as desirable as possible, because however easy it is, it's still a headache employing someone who's expatriated, especially if you haven't yet made the move. So it's always going to be easier to hire someone who hasn't got that baggage.
Unless you already have a visa, like for me.
Yeah, but even then, you're still from a different culture, from a different country. Like I said before, you working in the pub gave you an insight into a culture difference. Yeah, it's just like there are still differences, but even more so if you haven't yet got the visa, you want them to sponsor you. Yeah, if you're already in the country, it's a bit easier, but still, you're going to want to be more attractive than someone who's grown up there. So don't just, it's not just the same as knocking out your CV and firing it over and crossing your fingers. Like, really look for resources of how do I make my, and not stupid resources like how to make it stand out. Oh, make it massive purple font with stupid fucking designs on it. Like, don't do anything stupid, but just think, what do I need to put on this? How's the best way to format it? You know, I did that for, you know, for this job, which I didn't have any issues with regards to changing country. I was in the same industry, I was in the same geographical area, but I wanted to make sure I gave myself the best chance. So I looked up resources and little things now, like I've got my LinkedIn network, that LinkedIn profile link at the top of my CV, because I didn't know, you know, you've got a URL to your own profile. So I thought, well, you know, then you can put your own resources on there and you can really flesh out your profile in a lot of different ways, and your recommendations are on there, anything you've published are on there. So, you know, if you treat that like an extended CV, and then you can put the URL for that on your resume. So, you know, seek out those references. I'm not necessarily saying pay someone to help you, but obviously those people are out there, that professionals can help you do that. But, and save me the cover letter. So just really, really go the extra mile in making yourself, like, make them seem they've got no choice but to at least interview you because you're that good on paper. So, and if you really, if you're able to do that, even if they don't hire you, it at least shows the recruitment managers and the agencies and whoever you're talking to that this is someone a little bit special. And you can be fortunate, just because you don't get that job, if you impress the right people, it can lead to you getting a different one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just really, really go the extra mile on that.
And I would also say try and take that advice as well if you're working with recruitment companies. So that can be a really good kind of alliance for you if you are in a maybe more specific industry. You know, if you're just doing kind of receptionist work or, you know, administrative work or something like that, you know, it shouldn't be too difficult. But if you are in an industry that's like more niche or has qualifications, you can get a lot of help from just, you know, looking up in the new country, like if there's recruitment agencies who recruit for that industry. Like I said, I worked for a company who specialized in finance and accountancy roles. So if you find an agency that does that in the new country, they can give you tips. They can tell you maybe where to, they could probably give you information on what you need to do for your qualification, or at least who you need to go to talk about that. And if you impress a recruitment agency, like, recruiters are like bloodthirsty, you know, they want that fee. So if you can impress them and show that, okay, I'll get that qualification, or I'm working on it now, or I'm already doing this, or, you know, I bring a new angle to this field because I've looked at it from another country, whatever it is, if you can impress them, when recruiters find a candidate, and this is speaking from experience, that they think is shit hot, they want to do everything they can to place them, because then you're a fat fee to them.
And the sad reality, though, that you can use to your advantage is it doesn't take much to be better than most people. Like, most people are lazy and average.
And not relevant to what they're applying for.
So, yeah, so, you know, the things you used to tell me working in recruitment was, like, these people have come to us, they haven't got the qualifications, they haven't checked us out as an agency to know that they're looking for an industry that you don't deal with because you're a niche agency. So in that regard, going to the right agency already puts you better than some people who go there. Then if you're friendly and personable, that puts you above the people who are rude and belligerent and people who feel entitled to it.
Mm-hmm. Or people that are just applying for, like, because they have to fill out so many applications for their unemployment benefits.
Yeah, and then there are some people who will be on the phone all the time and you don't mind the phone call. And then you get the people who are on the phone just chasing you. Have you got me a job? Have you got me a job? Yeah. Have you got me a job? Yeah, so there's if you kind of look at it as different tiers of ways you can be, the ways you need to compete. So you've got your experience, your qualifications, your personality, your mannerisms, like your so-called soft skills of how you deal with people. If you look at each of those as an individual category and think, how can you like level up in each one? Mm-hmm. You'll very quickly put yourself in the top 5% of applicants.
Yeah, totally.
So when people say, oh, each job there's 200 people applying for each position, yeah, well, at least 50% of those shouldn't be applying in the first place. They're, you know, lawyers applying for a neurosurgeon application, yeah, type thing. They're never going to get it. Then you can discount a bunch of people because they're just shit. So the actual people who you're really competing with is a much smaller pool than the 300 people who applied for it. You get people, yeah, applying for jobs out of desperation. You know, so don't worry about that. But make yourself as good as you can be in all areas. Like, go get a haircut before you meet with anyone. You know, just make yourself look presentable. Cut your nails. Like, little things like that, again, will put you above other people. And if you have a face-to-face, work on your handshake. Like, those, yeah, first impressions make all the difference.
And it's always better to overdress a little bit than think, oh, they're casual, so I'll go in casual.
Yeah.
It's always better to look sharper than you need to, because you
can... Well, like, we had someone interview at my work, and they went for the... we were recruiting for a designer, like a graphic designer. And it's, you know, we're smart casual. We're not even smart. We're casual office. It's the marketing department, and that particular role was graphic designers. It's all very relaxed. And the hiring manager had no problem with it. He said it's fine. But so they turned up in, like, a suit, but like a casually shirt suit, you know, like they weren't wearing a tie and stuff. But then they had these like red trainers on. And so we got like the water coolers just outside the room they're into, and we've got glass walls on the meeting rooms. And so the manager of the department walked past me, he's like, it's in their shoes. I was thinking the same thing, like, who wears that to an interview in finance as well?
Yeah.
So yeah, fine, the office is kind of casual, but you don't really know that going in. You just think this is a bank, and there's sort of expectations of how you appear in a bank. So, you know, we had a lot of fun, Joe, talking about it afterwards, because, like I said, the manager recruiting for that position said, no, it's fine, this design. And we're like, yeah, well, they didn't know that coming in. You know, so how you look before you've had a chance to sit down and open your mouth and show what your experience is, what you're capable of, and what you bring to the table, they've got in their mind of, like, how are you going to represent that company with external meetings? You know, if you go and see the agency, can they trust you at events and stuff? And they're thinking about those few steps ahead. So, it, like I said, it's a sad reality that it doesn't take much effort, but you can really use it to your advantage. Think, how do I put myself in the top 5%? Yeah. Of applications for applicants for this role.
Another thing that you should do, and this is something, whether you're applying for like really specific jobs to your taste, or sorry, to your experience, or kind of you're trying a few different things. Firstly, tailor your CV. Have different versions of it for different types of roles, because you want to make sure that you tweak each skill to hit what they're looking for in that job description or in that job advertisement.
Yeah, and you don't need everything on there either. I mean, if you had your very first job waiting tables and you're now 10 years on applying for, you know, like a senior position, unless you can state specific skills that you learned, then it's probably not
worth it. Yeah, or even just list, you know, because they would like to see solid work history. So even if you just put the dates and the job title that you were doing it,
yeah,
and then don't.
Fact, I worked here.
Yeah, you don't need to put what your duties or you know, what your role was. The other thing is, so yeah, tailor your CV and cover letter if necessary to each one. I was laid off from a job a couple years ago and took some time out to decide, okay, what do I want to do now? And that's how I now ended up in marketing. And I did that. It was a lot of work, but I wasn't working. I had time to tailor each CV, and yeah, probably 95% of those went unresponded to, but the one that came back, well, there was a couple that came back, but one of them is my job now, and, you know, there was a great crossover. It wasn't like an obvious transition, but there were similarities in the skills into what the new job would require. So had I not gone through my CV and tweaked it and explained why those skills were transferable, you know, maybe they wouldn't have seen that. They wouldn't have seen the relevance if I just fired off my template CV that I sent to every single job. So that's really important.
I think people forget that. Like, we all know us. Like, we know ourselves and we know what we're capable of. And so it's hard to sort of make ourselves objective to how other people view us.
Yeah.
And so you kind of think, oh, I know what I mean with this sentence on here. Or, oh, when you're listing on your CV what your responsibilities were, you're not necessarily explaining it in as much detail as what you've actually done. You think, oh, when I get the interview, but like, you're one of many, many, many
bits of paper. You need to paint the picture as easily for them as you can, because like I said, whether it's a recruiter or an employer who's, you know, recruiting directly, they're getting inundated with people who are relevant, aren't relevant. My stomach just grumbled. I hope no one could hear that because it's right near the microphone. So you just
told everyone in case.
Yeah, but, well, it's funny. I don't really care. But just in case you heard that, it wasn't a fart. It was my tummy. Yeah, so just make sure it's clear. Make sure they can see that, because you want to grab their attention, not just like Rich said, by being impressive, but you want to get it straight away across that you're impressive or whatever.
Yeah.
The other thing, going back a little bit to when Rich was talking about working, we were talking about working with recruitment companies or employment agencies. He said, you know, you don't want to be the person who's phoning up every day and hounding them. Have you got me a job? Just on that, like I said, a recruiter wants to make money out of you. Therefore, they want to place you in a job. Therefore, they will call you if they have anything for you. That being said, sometimes if you're a creative option for a role, or you haven't spoken to the recruiter in a little while, they may overlook you. So yeah, don't be the guy or the girl phoning up and saying, why haven't I heard from you? Da da da. But go through those jobs every couple weeks.
Yeah, and have something to say. Either you, like, on that, you call it something specific. I saw this role on, this is what I had to do with an agency, and I said, you know, I saw this role on your website, would I be a good fit for that thing? And if you're not getting anywhere with them, say, what do you recommend that I do to become more desirable? You know, am I missing a qualification? Am I missing something? And just let them tell you, because they may not tell you off their own back, because they're going to hope you're going to go away, you know, you're not relevant or whatever. But if you show that you're proactive and you want to make their life, like, make their life easier, and let them say, you know what, like, these we think you're a good fit for this type of job over here, the ones you're applying for, you really need this qualification.
Yeah.
You know, they may not be being dicks. But the other thing I was going to say was, and I think is really relevant if you're moving country, but it's very relevant as well, but don't just think there's only one way to play the game of getting a job. Like, oh, I have to do my CV, I have to cover letter, I have to go on to the internet, you know, the job boards or the agencies. You can also take some initiative and try and make connections, you know, especially like LinkedIn Premium, like with its InMail. So I think the way it works with that is, like, doesn't it guarantee that you'll get a response or they'll get your money back or something?
You will get the credit. So I think if you have a certain level, and again, I use LinkedIn a lot when I was recruiting, it's changed a little bit, but my understanding is, if you pay for a certain level of LinkedIn, yeah, you get these in-mails, which means you're guaranteed to get the credit back.
That's right.
If they don't answer. So
anyone doesn't know what it is, like, in-mail is basically you send a private message to people, but you can reach anyone. You can reach CEOs, you can reach the hiring managers. You know, the targeting features on LinkedIn are so specific now.
So you don't have to be, like, connected. So I think it's...
Yes.
You can only connect people that you have certain level of connection. Yeah,
they haven't got to be in your connected network.
Yeah, so this means you can reach.
So be selective. Don't fire off an email to, like, Bill Gates or Tim Cook and say, can I have a job at Apple, please? Like, go through the appropriate channels, but you can find out who's the hiring manager at Apple of the department that you're good at. You can look for the mutual connections that you might have. And, you know, you can try and talk to people who can put you in touch with them, because if someone goes to Tim Cook, who he trusts, and says, you know what, this guy over here, I think he'd be a really good fit, that's very different for him to get a trusted recommendation from someone than you going direct. So be selective and be sensible with it, but the point is, you can be making these connections on the side, and you can be, you know, ask people, can you take them out for coffee and talk to them, and make that network, really, in addition to just sending off your CV and hoping that someone's going to hire you.
two things on that. One of the great ways to do to make that work into your like for your fit into your in your favor is one, if you're reaching out to someone, obviously you're not going to know unless you know them through someone mutual, but unlikely you have anyone mutual if you're moving to a new country. But if you find someone you think, oh, they're a hiring manager or they're an HR person, maybe they don't deal with the kind of roles you're looking for. So always frame it with, I'm not sure if you're right, if you're the right person for this. If not, apologies. Would you mind pointing me in the right direction? This is kind of what I'm looking for. So always frame it like you're not trying to take up their time. If they're not the right person, you acknowledge it. You don't really know who's best. And second of all, it's really flattering when you approach people saying, oh, I really want to pick your brain. People love that idea, and that could lead to something. Oh, they came to me. They respect my knowledge or my position, and that can just build a relationship. It may not lead to a job, but it may lead to, I know so-and-so who knows so-and-so
who's looking for someone. Yeah, this isn't a five-minute, like, I'm going to just send an email.
It's a slow burner.
But it's not to say you've got to put your research in, so you need to find out, you know, you've got to go through your, find the people that you want to talk to, for one. See what they do. Like, if they publish something that you can say, I loved your article in Forbes or whatever. And if you, if you genuinely, always be sincere with these things, but let's say they've written an article or they've been on a podcast or they've done a talk, whatever it is, actually watch it or listen to it or read it. Pull out two or three things that you actually did really like. And then they're going to know you're being authentic. You can send them this message that says, I really liked your article in Forbes, in particular, your point about unlimited holiday income, whatever, you know, so they know you've read it. You're not then you flattered them a little bit, and they're thinking, okay, this is someone who's not just using me, like I've been helpful to them.
Yeah,
then you can either say to them, you know, I'd love to talk a bit more about this, or I work in this, but you know, you can form. But the point is, you've got to do your research, you've got to find out the right person, something you can hang your hat on in reaching out to them. And then you can look back through your own network and see, because LinkedIn doesn't just say, I'm friends with this person. LinkedIn says, this is a third point of connection. So you know someone who knows someone who knows this person. So then you can talk to your network in addition to this messaging and say, I see you know Tracy who knows the Michelle I'm reaching out to. Can you put me in touch with them?
There's also, I think, introductions on LinkedIn. I think there's a way that you can contact someone who's maybe a first degree connection to like a third degree connection, so you can say like, hey, can you, there's some kind of function where you can introduce people.
But just be mindful how you do it, because you don't want to just do that to someone you've not spoken to in years. Can you put me in touch with them? You've got to say, you know, you've got to do your small talk bit at the beginning.
Yeah,
you've got to be friendly. And
as an example, as I mentioned, like, you know, I was made redundant or laid off from a job and started looking into marketing. And there was a really cool agency in our roughly local area who had a really cool website. The culture looked really cool for the team. And they'd done some, worked with some really cool brands. And Rich really encouraged me to do this. This can be kind of nerve-wracking to do because it seems obvious that you're reaching out to them about, like, you basically just want a job. But I just reached out to the guy and said, hey, you know, I really love your company's website. Seems like you've got a really great team and you've worked with some, you know, this business, this project you did with them, I think is really cool. I'd love to, excuse me, to just talk to you sometime. By the time he came back to me, I'd already accepted my job that I have now. And, you know, I can see why he probably wasn't in a rush to come back, because at the time I didn't have really many relevant skills. But who knows, a few years from now, I could find myself needing to find another job and I could go back and, hey, you know, he'd see that chat history.
Yeah.
We did talk a few years ago. Oh, and look, she's got more experience now. And maybe it's worth having a coffee. It's just,
and you didn't say, I want to come and work for you, give me a job. You said, I really like these things at your company, I just want to let you know, and, you know, yeah, I'd love to meet sometime. And that's where you have that coffee meeting. And again, you're not just, like, straight off the bat asking them for a job. Is you're trying to genuinely build
rapport
and a relationship with people. And I think as an extension of that, going back to what I said about LinkedIn, but people have, you know, great success using Twitter similarly, is if you really are in a niche industry, or you really do have good ideas, or you've got thoughts on the industry or your specific skills, then try and put up a little portfolio. Yes, it's easier than ever. Like LinkedIn, you can have your slide presentations if they bought SlideShare. You can upload videos to it. You can link to things you had published elsewhere. So, and you haven't got to have it published in an actual newspaper or an actual website. You can publish your own thoughts on your own LinkedIn profile.
Or your own blog or whatever.
Or your own blog. So just put your thoughts. And then when you reach out, so especially if you do this LinkedIn in-mail thing, they can look at your profile and see, oh, this person's written 5, 10, 15, 20 articles on this, and you've got some interesting ideas. So yeah, let's meet for coffee. You know, so again, these are all just like, you haven't got to use all of these ideas, but you know, maybe one of them. But I think the main thing is, don't rely on, I'll write my CV, I'll send it off, and I'll hope I get the interview. Like, be proactive. What can I do that's going to make me stand out on paper and in person? What can I do to get to know more people? How do I make myself more attractive to a recruitment agency or a manager? And then what can I do alongside that? Like, who can I reach out to? How can I make these introductions and get these connections? And what do I... Right, like, same thing we've read with this podcast is we have a little list of topics that we want to discuss in addition to the requests we get. Do that. Think, what do I think about my industry that could be improved or that I've learned or my favourite things about it or whatever, you know, and write about them or make videos about them and put them on your LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm. I think that's probably more specific to people in...
That's like a career
kind of thing. Or not even just a career, because people make, you know, careers out of being, like I said, a receptionist, whereas...
But what I mean is, like, you know, when you just were a barmaid,
yeah,
that was just something you did temporarily, and you knew that.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think, and it all comes down to also, a job search in any situation requires a lot of patience. It can be a bit demoralizing. Like I said, when I had been laid off, the number of things I applied for and didn't hear anything back. So, and then also, like Rich said, you know, you're going to have to make yourself stand out even more in some situations if you're, you know, trying to get a job in a different country. So, yeah, you just got to see.
Yeah, I mean, the earlier you can start doing all this kind of stuff, the better.
Yeah, definitely. Is there anything else you kind of want to throw in there? I don't think we've missed anything obvious.
I think we've said more than we'd expected to.
Yeah. We just gave general career advice. Find a job with Andrea and Rich.
Yeah, that's going to be our new podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I think if anyone thinks we've missed anything or you've done this, then let us know, you know, let our audience know that you've got ideas or what worked for you or what didn't work for you.
Mm.
But I don't think I've got anything else to say.
One thing I wanted to go back on again, because... You find a little example and then you run away with it and I can't get back to it. I'd already tried to go back to it, but the thing of calling up and asking, oh, you know, why haven't you got a job for me with a recruitment agency? I kind of had started to say that sometimes you might be quite a creative option for a job, and you had said, oh, you know, they're not always just being jerks. There might be, maybe they're looking for someone who specifically has come from this college or this background or this previous company or whatever. People can be, especially the more industry specific and niche your role is, like their scope for what they're looking for gets narrower and narrower. But one thing you started to say that I kind of had a little bit more of a thought on is keep an eye out on the jobs that they're posting. Oh, hey, last week I saw you put this up.
Mm-hmm.
Just wondered if there was a reason you hadn't talked to me. I know that my skills don't look completely exact to this, but if you think about it, the number of times working in recruitment, I heard the recruiters saying stuff like, oh yeah, I didn't see you. You didn't apply for that, did you? Okay. Yeah, actually, now that I think about it, you might be a really good creative fit for that. So
it's like you said, they want to place you.
Yeah, and they may not think of it.
Make them see why you're a good fit.
Yeah, and like sometimes they're looking at a job. It's like you get tunnel vision. They're working on this and they're working on this, and sometimes they don't think of the slightly creative option. So maybe you had a slightly different role, or it's a sideways step or something like that. You know. It's worth just phoning up, but like Rich said, make sure there's a reason. Don't just phone up and say, you haven't called me. Say, hey, I saw this job, just wondering if there was any reason.
Well, it looks good, doesn't it, that you've got the self-awareness to say, because you don't just say, why have you not given, like, suggested this? But if you were to say, as you said, oh, I know that this doesn't exactly align, or they're looking for this thing I haven't got, or whatever, it shows the self-awareness that you've got, and then you're not just this entitled dickhead who keeps hounding them.
And you're not just a bump on a log waiting for the recruitment agency to call you either. So, and you know what? Like Rich said, the people that phone up constantly and are just hounding them, they get a bad reputation, and eventually they're going to stop taking your calls. But if you only ever call when you have something legitimate to ask them about, and it's often like, oh, okay, yeah, maybe you phone up and you're not right for it, but you're polite, you took, you know, what they said is, okay, yeah, that makes sense, I see why I'm not suitable, thanks for your time. You know, if you're just like, you're calling for a reason and you're polite and you're understanding and you're not just pushing your case, you're going to get a lot further with them.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, like we said, they want to make money out of
well,
you.
Well, it's like I said before, if you've worked on your people skills, because again, you're not just dealing with the agency, like they're not your end point. You're dealing with the agency in the hope they're going to pass you on to someone to give you a job. So the person that they pass you on to, presumably the agency's got an ongoing relationship with them, and they depend, like the agency depends on that person to give them their salary and their mm-hmm. commission. So they're not going to say, oh yeah, I've got this person who keeps hounding me, I don't like them, they're really unprofessional, they're discourteous. They're not going to put you forward.
Mm.
And so don't just keep thinking, oh, I'll keep hounding them and they're going to get sick of me and then they'll pass me on. They won't, because
they'll
just
stop taking your calls.
They're going to then, they're not going to jeopardise their relationship with the you know, the actual people hiring.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to jeopardise their relationship by sending an unprofessional person who they're not going to like. They'll stop taking the calls. So just think, you know, you have to impress that agency as much, if not more, than the person who you actually have the interview with to give you the job.
Because once, that's totally true, because once you get in with the agency and then you get put in front of, you know, the actual employer, you've got someone saying, hey, I'm vouching for them, I'm putting them across to you, I think they're relevant, interview them, or, you know, here's, you know, look at their CV.
It doesn't mean like
consideration.
I mean, my experience with recruitment agencies is they will try and, to you, they will try and lower your expectations a bit, because then you're going to be easier to place. So, you know, don't do everything they say, but be respectful. And if they have something that you think is actually good advice, then implement it. I mean, for me, like, I wasn't changing industry or anything, but I said, I'm not moving. I like where I am in my current job. I'm not moving unless it's a significant increase in money. Mm. Nothing like ludicrous. And they said, oh, okay, well, we think you should go for this. And it was like $2,000 more than I'm on. I was like, I'm not moving for that. And you know, they ended up getting me a new job, but I was realistic with them and upfront about what my expectations were. So then if they then offered me something, if I was turning it down, it was in keeping with what I'd said up front.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing more, I imagine, nothing more frustrating for an agency where you said, oh yeah, whatever, I don't mind, and then you turn everything down. You're going to annoy them pretty quick. You know, so be transparent with them.
But also don't be too specific.
No, but I'm just generally trying to make the point of, you know, be an easygoing person, don't be too specific, but let them know what you're generally looking for here.
Yeah, agencies can be frustrating. You know, you won't hear back. I mean, unless you are, like, the perfect candidate in that industry, then, yeah, they'll be calling you left, right. But also remember, even if you are a perfect candidate, like, sometimes certain job roles, people just aren't recruiting for that. They're, you know, this role that's different than what you do is what's in demand right now, or that one, or everyone only wants temporary jobs when you're looking for permanent, you know. So there's a lot to consider, but you won't hear from them as much as you want to, so do politely and with reason chase up.
I mean, I'm not really someone who says, you know, everything happens for a reason. It's about you, aren't you?
Yeah,
but like,
most of the time.
Don't underestimate sort of just good fortune happening. I mean, I don't know if we've ever sort of mentioned how our job situation changed, but you've mentioned that I used to work from home, and then we'd had conversations. I said, oh, you know, I think I'll look for a proper job.
Non-freelance, basically.
Yeah, like an office-based job, steady income, working with people again. And out of the blue, I got a phone call from an agency who I'd never even heard of. I hadn't even applied for any jobs. I think we just mentioned it, and then work picked up again. But I got an out-of-the-blue phone call from an agency I'd never heard of saying, we found you on, and they found me on LinkedIn, because in my experience section, I'd mentioned that I'd written for a car brand on the for a freelance agency. They found that through searching on LinkedIn, and their client happened to be a car sort of marketing company. They worked with different brands, and they sent me for an interview on that. I didn't get that job. Nearly a year later, that same agency called me up and said, we sent this interview last year, you didn't get it, we think you'd like to go, we think you'd be good for this other role. And that's the one I did get. And so I just couldn't really believe that just landed in my lap, because I hadn't seeked them out. I didn't get that. I assume the feedback was positive from that first interview, and I didn't get it because they then sent me for another one. But just think, and I don't mean that to be just be lazy and let life happen. I mean the opposite of just think, what can I do to make myself become more easily discoverable online? You know, is my LinkedIn profile fleshed out? If I'm on Twitter, have I got drunk pictures of me calling everyone a cunt and just generally not being a nice person? Or is it uplifting, positive content? You know, just think, who's the person you want to be and the person you want to be seen as?
Yeah, you never know, really, is what it comes down to. And, like, you were planting seeds. You know, you tried to get a few interviews. You made sure you had those specific, you know, car industries and finance stuff you'd done, and that flagged up. Like, for me, again, it was kind of a... It was in the industry I wanted. It wasn't really a role that I had thought about, you know, because I'd been made redundant. I wanted to get into marketing. The role that I ended up getting was different from what I thought I would get, but my skills that I gained in recruitment actually really lended to what this role was, even though it wasn't a recruitment job. But those communication skills and, you know, relationship building, all that stuff you have to do in recruitment really worked for this role. And, you know, I thought, oh, you know what? I haven't looked at this job board. I forgot about that job board and found it. And it wasn't advertising anywhere else, you know, for whatever reason that day. I thought I should check that job board, and I did, and it was there, and I applied for it, and they called me. I had the phone interview. We met. The interview was so short, I thought, oh my God, they must have hated me. Mm-hmm. By the time I got home, there was an email. We really enjoyed meeting you. We thought it went great. If you're interested, we'd like you to do a little task for us. Are you interested? And it just went from there, and it felt like it came out of nowhere, even though I've been applying for job after job after job. But it just has to be one thing that fits right to make it work, really.
Yeah, and on that, I think going back to what you mentioned earlier on about how I'd suggested you reach out to that company and say, I really like this, and can we meet? I think the point of that was, yeah, you're building these relationships and you're expanding your network, but equally, you're not just waiting for a job to become available. Like, the companies I've worked for, we have a careers page on our website so people can come to us directly as well. So find the company you want to work for and see if there's an opening. Yeah. If there's not, that was what the point of your email was if an opening becomes available, then I want to be in that person's mind. Then before they go to agency, be like, you know, it's worth meeting Andrea just to see.
Mm-hmm.
We think, you know, so just my attitude's always just been be proactive. And if there's not an opportunity, see if you can create one. You can't always create one, but you can at least try to. If you reach out to a company you want to work for and they say, no, go away, nothing happens. Like, you haven't ruined your life in any way. You're not going to bump into those people. They don't know you. You just now know that's not really an avenue for you. But on the flip side, it could turn into the job you really want. It could give you, and if nothing else, it gives you a little bit more of a skill in reaching out to people. Like, that's a sales skill in itself. And then if you get told no, then fine, it hardened you a little bit. You can take that rejection. So there's a learning in everything.
Yeah, and I think, you know, really what you're getting at overall is don't put all your eggs in one basket. So don't just apply for jobs. Don't just go on LinkedIn. You need to do a combination. And one thing that I think people don't really think about is like industry specific expos and conferences and stuff. Like, if you go to a conference, sure, the hiring companies may not be there, but, you know, say you work in software and you go to, for the sake of, you know, been talking about recruitment, say you go to the recruitment expo, and they who's displaying there? Loads of software companies that are specific to that industry. And you can go and you can start talking to people and start building a network. So, you know, there's all kinds of things you can do. And again, these are the slow burner things. But, you know, if you're out there visiting your partner and you know that in the next year or two you want to make the move, start doing things like this.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it can make it a lot easier. But yeah, be patient above all. Do your homework. Make sure you know what qualifications are going to be like. And mainly, first of all, know if you can work or what you need to do in order to work.
Yep.
The end.
The end.
Also go see John Wick 3.
Yeah.
And send me coffee because I'm jet lagged.
Come talk to us, Mr. Mrs. Distance on Instagram, not Mr. Mrs. Instagram. and give us your tips or experiences.
Let us know if there's anything else you want us to talk about. Tell us your stories. Tell us if you've made it. And close the distance. We want to hear it all. Bye.